And not only embryonic animals, but fully grown ones form a key part of the work investigating heart function. Holly Shields is based at Manchester University, where she studies fish. Now, fish are useful to study because some species can survive in both hot and cold water, or even at low oxygen levels, without their hearts giving up. If we can understand how, it will help doctors to develop better therapies for humans living with heart disease. I nipped away from the conference to visit Holly's lab to find out how.
We work at a number of levels. We work with whole animals. We have a swim tunnel, which is a treadmill for fish. We can put the fish in the tunnel and make them exercise, changing the flow of the water that the fish must swim against, changing the temperature, the oxygen concentration, to try and mimic the conditions in the environment and see how that affects the ability to swim.
Is that here, by the way? Could we take a look at that? It is like a bathtub with a sort of tunnel, so I guess you can look at the fish really easily when it's swimming along there.
Exactly.
And it's not full of water at the moment, but when it is, you can just pump it through as fast as you want and I guess really put the fish through their paces.
But the funny thing is fish love to swim, so you put them in the tunnel and they swim. We don't make them go too fast and we don't make the conditions too difficult for them. Just things they would experience in the wild.
And what can this tell you?
Well, the first thing we can do is to look at how they swim. The link between that and the cardiovascular system is that the heart really underlies all performance aspects of the fish. And so we can ask it to swim under different conditions. We can also put probes on the fish to be able to measure heart function while it's swimming. The simplest is measuring ECGs or electrocardiograms. Those are fairly non-invasive, just on the center of the surface of the fish. And we can measure ECGs or heart rates during exercise. But we can also do more invasive things, putting flow probes on, measuring pressure, measuring blood flow.
What are you hoping this will tell us when you get all these readings?
Well, it'll hopefully tell us whether or not the cardiovascular system is responsible for its ability to swim, and what aspect is it? Is it the pumping ability? Is it pressure development? Is it the electrical ability? That kind of leads me on to some interesting work we were doing up in the Arctic last summer. And we were looking at a fish called the Arctic sculpin. We know that there's two populations of Arctic sculpin. The one that was in this polar area seems to be progressively outcompeted by its more temperate cousin, the short-horn sculpin. So we were looking at the sensitivity of both of their hearts to increases in temperature. We were using ECGs to look at the stability of the electrical activity of the heart as temperatures increase. And so that can tell us whether or not one species has a more electrically stable heart than the other species. And if it does, that might affect its ability to migrate into different temperature zones.
Before I ask you what you found out, I've just got to ask, applying an ECG onto a fish in the Arctic, this sounds like a story.
That was exceptionally interesting. We were working at a research station in the Arctic, so we did have a lab and we did have the ability to try and do this. This wasn't out on a ship in the middle of the ocean. Our biggest problem was that our sculpins started eating each other in the tanks.
Oh, no.
And so we ended up having less species by the time we got to finishing all the experiments. But it was certainly an adventure, and I don't think we're at the answer, but there's, at this point, indications that the one with more thermal tolerance, wider thermal tolerance, its heart was able to withstand higher temperatures better.
Do we know why its heart is able to better tolerate these changes in temperature?
Well, that kind of comes to another way that we do our work. So we can look at the whole heart function, but we also work on the level of the single myocyte a lot of the time. Myocytes are the individual muscle cells that make up the working portion of the heart. So they're the parts that contract with each heartbeat and relax to allow the heart to fill. And so what we can do is take a heart and digest it using enzymes into these individual cells. And then we can use a technique called voltage clamp or using ion imaging to look at ion flow across the cell membranes. That can tell us which of the different components that allow the heart to function are affected by the environment.
What has this told you about what makes a heart adaptable and what doesn't?
Well, I think that we've certainly... This is my work. This is the work of one of my colleagues in Finland, Matti Vornanen. He's been able to show that the sodium channel is fairly temperature sensitive and might set the ability for the heart to work at high temperatures.
And what are these sodium channels for?
These are the channels that open in the cell that initiates muscle contraction.
I see. So the thing that helps the heart to ba-boom, ba-boom at the cell level might be what is key to different species being able to do well in certain conditions.
Yes, exactly. But what's also interesting is it's the same ion channels that control the ba-boom, ba-boom from across all species. So whether or not we're looking at a fish, we're looking at a reptile, or we're looking at mammals and humans, we still have similar components of ion channels, and so we can use fish or reptiles really to get deeper understanding about how the heart works as a whole, and hopefully be able to use the information there to probe or to ask questions that are relevant at the level of humans as well.
Okay, so what kind of things that might be relevant to humans have you come across so far? Because I know I was wondering, like, how similar to humans' heart is a fish heart. So what kind of things have you found?
Well, certainly they're different at the whole heart level. But at the ion channel level, there's some similarities. And in a sense, that's been quite instructive for some recent work we've been doing looking at the effects of pollutants on the cardiovascular system. So we came into this work a few years ago when we were asked to help understand the implications of the Gulf oil spill on the pelagic fish, the tuna, the mackerel, and we looked at the effects of different components of the oil.
And what did you find?
Well, we found that oil is not good for heart cells. It causes the cells to lose their electrical stability.
I imagine if the cells lose the ability to contract and relax at the regular intervals that they need to do, that could lead to the heart not beating the way it's supposed to.
Exactly. And we also found it also affected the calcium channels. And these calciums, the ion that actually is responsible for the heart contracting and for the heart relaxing. So it was affecting both the contractility and the electrical activity.
Holly Shields,